Pete Robertson, Ranger Travis, and Captain of Rangers had plenty of time to think on the way up from the surface. It was all Mitch's fault, and God's judgment on Mitch's hasty ways and unhealthy attachment to Outlander technology was about to land on all of them. He made up his mind and called the others. They would make sure no one used that heathen station for anything ever again, and that Mitch paid the price for his unbelief. The two enemy shuttles that had docked to the derelict would present no problem if they simply blew the derelict up, and he'd toyed with the idea of having Yellow Rose and Heart of Texas do that before they went out to fight the invaders, but he'd rather do it himself. It felt right. So he shuffled carefully off the shuttle with the rest of the Travis crew and led the way down the corridor that lay open before him. Sam DuBois, Ranger Austin, had landed at the far end of the long structure. Both groups would set explosive charges as they converged on the enemy and then retreat and blow the station. The odd thing was, his personnel scanners detected only a small cluster of life forms way up ahead, in the central core, and two off to the right somewhere. Maybe Mitch hadn't caught the women yet. He smiled to himself, forgetting for the moment the missing enemy from the shuttles. When the little tracked crawler trundled out of a side corridor, he spun and with practiced ease drew and fired. Bullets ricocheted off the thing's hard shell and holed the bulkhead in a scattered pattern. The machine came on, a jointed arm holding some device. Behind it was another one, just coming into view around a corner.
It knows.
Behind him, the Travis crew clumped up, and someone's shot shattered the device the thing was holding. But the crawlers came on more slowly.
They can't catch us. Come on.
He turned back to move on the way they'd been going, which was now blocked by huge figures in black armor holding weapons he'd never seen.
Hit 'em, boys.
Then the strange weapons belched streams of something gray that shoved him back into his men and glued them all into one immobile mass. When the next explosion came from the far end, he had a sudden stark fear that it would ignite the charges his crew had left behind and blow them all. He was not, he discovered, nearly as ready to meet his maker as he'd always claimed.
Dumber than dirt. You'd think they never heard of riot control. We still have one bunch loose.
Belay that. We've got worse problems. Brynn and Sweeza fell off the station.
One moment, Esme had been checking where everyone was. The next, with no warning, the gurney tent ruptured. Air puffed out. Live fire. It had to be.
Oh!
Esme threw herself on the gurney, covering Brynn's body, and slammed Brynn's face shield shut. Even through her armor, she could feel Brynn breathing. She could see Brynn's face, rigid with fury or terror. She couldn't tell which. But the mask was clear, which meant that air and filters were both working. She pushed herself up a little and locked the elbow position so her armor wouldn't crush Brynn if something hit her hard. She and her armor were between Brynn and whatever was going on, and someone else could handle that. Then the deck bucked hard, buckled, and the damaged bulkhead peeled away. She caught a glimpse of other suited figures tumbling, someone grabbing for the other gurney, and some blow thrust her toward the opening, out into the brilliant sunlight. By the time she realized she was tumbling outside the station, she knew she was still clinging to Brynn, the armor's power-assisted gloves clamped to the frame of the gurney. The view beyond shifted crazily. Light, dark, starfield, planet, station. She tried to focus on the helmet readouts and finally found the ones that gave an estimated relative V to her ship, the station, a mere 2.43 meters per second. Brynn, when she looked, was staring back at her with no recognition. Of course not. Esme had never changed her face shield to allow it. Impossible now. She had no idea what to do, but she knew one thing not to do. Let go of the gurney frame. Her suit had the beacon.
Lieutenant!
Esme hoped that was the first call.
Sweeza here.
Lieutenant, have you got the gurney?
Yes, she's alive. Air's flowing.
What about you? Somebody thought they saw a plume.
Another look at her helmet readouts was not so reassuring. Her own air was down, and the gauge was sagging visibly. Esme remembered her first terrifying EVA from Kosciusko.
Low, and going down.
The blast may have pulled your air feed loose. Can you check it?
Not without letting go of the gurney, and I'm not going to. What's the situation?
They're dead. We've got two dead and four tumblers, counting you and the gurneys as one. Max has you all on scan. We'll have a sled to you in less than 10 minutes.
What is your air?
3 minutes. If it doesn't leak any faster.
Is Bruin conscious?
Yes. She's looking at me, but she can't see me. My helmet shield's still mirrored.
I'm gonna transmit to her. Tell her to see if she can stop your leak.
No, it's too dangerous.
It'll be more dangerous if you pass out and can't help guide the sled in.
Esme could see the change in Brun's expression, though Mahari hadn't patched the transmission to her. Then Brun wriggled around, wrapping one arm in the straps waving from the gurney, and reaching around behind Esme. Her arm wasn't long enough. She tapped Esme's shoulder. If Esme let go with one hand and turned, Brun might be able to reach whatever it was. But she might lose her grip on the gurney. They might not find her. Brun's tap the next time was a solid slug. Esme grinned to herself. Whatever the damage, Brun hadn't changed in some essentials. Carefully, slowly, Esme loosened her grip on the gurney frame on that side and transferred her grip to one of the grab straps on Brun's pea suit. Brun wriggled more. The air gauge quit dropping, stabilized at 8 minutes.
8 minutes.
She's got the luck, that one.
Mahari did not say whether 8 minutes would be enough. Esme comforted herself with the knowledge that 1 minute of oxygen deprivation was within anyone's capacity. Brun bumped against her, flinging out an arm and leg.
What is she? Oh.
She was slowing rotation. Esme extended her legs on the other side. The confusing whirl of background slowed as they lay almost crosswise of each other, forming, with the gurney frame, a six-spoked wheel rolling slowly along. Then Brun reached up with her webbing-wrapped arm and pushed up Esme's mirror shield before Esme could bring an arm in to stop her. Her eyes widened. Then she grinned, as mischievous and merry a grin as Esme had ever seen on her face. She used the same arm to work free the thermal-packed bag of IV fluid stick-taped to the gurney, and very deliberately used her glove's screw blade attachment to poke a hole in it. Then she winked at Esme, looking past her, moved the bag around, and squeezed. A stream of saline jetted out, instantly converted to a spray of ice crystals that glittered in the sun. Esme wondered if Brun had just gone completely insane. Then she realized what it was. For all the good it would do, Brun was trying to use an IV as reaction mass to get them back to the station faster. Esme did her best to hold still, even as her air ran out, and the hunger for oxygen overtook her, urging her to run, struggle, fight her way out of the dark, choking tunnel that was squeezing the life out of her.